Drums in, let's have a party. Pump up the bitter. Shh, test it. Pump up the bitter. Pump up the bitter. Pump up the bitter.
Mark, we're back together again. It's Pubcast number 185.
Oh boy, that's a big number.
Well, in 184, I said that we might be going north of the border. I lied. We're not north of the border. And the reason why we're not north of the border is because our good friends in Downers Grove, Alta Brewing Company and Mark Hedrick, said, we got a time that you can come out and talk to us. So we're going to have to do that instead.
Well, I would say so.
So we're here at the Alta Brewing Company. And in just a second, we're going to be talking to Mark Hedrick, the brewer out here, and talking about his philosophy for brewing, his beers, and more importantly, sampling his beers. But hey, before we start, we had, it wasn't an email, but we had a communication back on our last show, 184. If you remember, we had a beer that had Xythos hops in it.
Correct.
And
yes,
we couldn't, for the life of us, this was from Second Shift, right? We yes, couldn't. We just couldn't find out what the hell it was. Well, Sean Curry, who is one of the co-founders and brewers up at Sketchbook Brewing in Evanston, actually sent me a message, because we are going to be doing some interviews and some shows with them very, very shortly up in Evanston. That's a haul up to Evanston, you know that.
Yeah, you're telling me that. Yeah. I don't even know where it is. So
I'm gonna have to gas up, you know.
Oh,
I mean,
right.
You know,
well, gas up. What do you plug in, yeah, rather?
Well, no, I got a hybrid. It's not just electric, you know. Anyway, but Sean was good enough to send me a message and say, "Hey guys, here's what Xythos hops are." Basically, it was quite a lengthy response. If I can just summarize the beginning of it, and maybe you can come in with some technical details. He said that it's a new IPA style created to optimize and exceed the aroma characteristics of the traditional and sometimes hard-to-get IPA hops. And there's a company, I think, called Hop Union, who had a team of professional hop sniffers. Hey, that's a hell of a job, being a hop sniffer, wouldn't you think that?
Yeah, it's almost like beer sniffer. They have those jobs, too.
You're a beer sniffer, I know that, from way back. Yeah.
I don't get paid for it, though.
Oh, no, that's true. Mm. So they came up with blending combinations of hops, and basically this Xythos hop is the result of that. And he says it's a perfect West Coast style for hoppy pale ales and IPAs. So there we go. Oh, and by the way, it was created by a guy called Will Harrison. How about that? We even got the guy who created it. Now, my question, Mark, is this a GMO, a genetically modified, or it could be a genetically modified?
Well, I don't know that for a fact, but hops are easy to produce. You can really breed them, crossbreed them, or anything else. You can create new hop varieties at ease. So hops are that way. You can create new ones really easily, and then you just have to figure out what you just created. So I don't think a GMO has anything to do with this.
Because I know when you cross-pollinate plants, right, you're taking some pollen from one, putting it onto another one, probably using a little, like, What's them little sticks?
I don't know.
Cotton buds.
Yeah, I don't know the details, but you can easily cross hops. That's easy. They like each other, and they create all kinds of hybrids easily.
If they're cross hops, how do they like one another? They cross at one another.
Right, yeah. Geez, I don't know how that all happens.
Anyway, Sean Curry, thank you so much for sending us that information. We're now educated on Xythos hops. And we're looking forward to coming up and visiting with Sketchbook when you get your new tap room open.
Yeah, I see when I read the specs here, it's very high alpha acid, that 10 to 12 and a half.
What does that mean to the average person?
That means it's very strong bitterness in it. Like, the higher the number, the stronger the bitterness in the hop. Normally, the European nobles, like them, are 2, 3, 4% alpha acids, and here we got over 10. So it's really, to me, what it normally means that the hop with high alpha acids is a little rough. It's a little chewy. You can almost feel it in your teeth.
If you want to eat hops.
Exactly. But the thing is that you can create, say, 50 IBUs with high alpha hops or low alpha hops. The low alpha hops normally, to me, means softer bitterness of the same level. These higher alpha acid hops, to me, they tend to be a little rough.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I like it a little rough sometimes, don't you?
Well, yeah, it's okay.
Are we still talking about beer? Okay.
Yes, keep it there. Keep it there, my friend.
Well, thank you again, Sean, for your information on Xythos hops. Back to this week's episode, and we're at Alta Brewing Company here in Downers Grove, and so I'm looking forward to talking to Mark. We've got a second Mark. That's gonna be tough to keep you guys straight.
Yeah, how are you going to do that?
Well, you'll be Mark 1, he'll be Mark 2.
All right, okay.
Okay, Mark 2 is always the better model.
A higher number.
Oh, sorry about that, Mark.
It's a higher number.
Higher number, yeah. We'll take a quick break and come back and join Mark, and Phil.
Right.
A relatively new brewery in Downers Grove, and I would say it's still got the sparkle of newness to it.
Oh yeah, it's shiny over here.
It is indeed. And also shiny with us is the brewer, Mark Hedrick. Mark, how are you?
Doing great, guys. How about yourself?
The last time we saw you, you were frantically pouring beers at the Naperville Winterfest, and that was quite some festival with over like 4,500 people there. How did that go down for you?
Went really well. We sold out the beer really quick. We had a great response from the crowd, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
That's good. Well, next winter. Well, you got Summerfest coming up as well, the Naperville, what did they call it? Summerfest, yeah, right, yeah. Something like that, yeah. So we wanted to come down and talk to you because I had been to your brewery once before on the advice of a friend. I'd had a chance to taste a couple of your beers, not in great volume, but ones that I tasted were good. We talked to you at Winterfest, and we wanted to come and find out a little bit more about Alta Brewing. Is it Alta Brewing or Alta Brewing?
Alta Brewing.
Because I have a big problem with that, you see, because everybody says Alta, O-W-L, they keep saying. What do you say?
Alta Brewing.
Alta Brewing, yeah. Now, where did the name come from?
Well, that's a good question. We get that all the time. The three partners came together about 3 years ago, and we had this idea to open this brewery. We had a vision on exactly what we wanted, but we had to come up with a name, right? Just like naming a band or your kid, for that example. Everyone has their ideas of what they want to name it. We went through dozens, if not hundreds, of names, actually. And for one reason or the other, one guy likes it, the other two hate it, or vice versa. Or then we all would agree on a name, and then we would do a Google search on that thing, And guess what? Trademarked, already taken, things like that. So,
and it's becoming tougher now as well.
Absolutely. Trademark laws are pretty tricky things. And
well, I meant with the volume of brewers that are popping up all over the place.
Volume of brewers?
Good for us.
Names, exactly. It's a great time to be a beer drinker, no doubt. But we kept changing it. We've changed our business model several times. We've changed our name several times. We like to change up our beers a lot, and we basically made career changes to do this. So we kept altering things. Yeah, there you go.
So now that's part of your makeup. Now your philosophy is to alter things all the time, right? Yeah.
Alter things all the time, and actually we did find another altar during
COVID. Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Where at?
Mexico.
So. Oh, okay. We're okay then.
We're okay.
Si, señora.
Is that what they say? I don't know. In front of us, as we look here, is a rather impressive array of samples that we have. And I think a good idea here is to just try and intersperse our conversation with a few of them. Where would you suggest we start?
I would start with the one right in front of you.
The one in front of me, which is?
That's our Waystation American Wheat Beer. Very low-key, easy drinking summer beer. About 30 IBUs on there, and it's about 4.9%. So very sessionable, very easy drinking wheat beer.
Okay, so I think we'll try that. I'm going to take a quick picture here before we dispense with these brews. There we go.
Yeah,
very nice.
See, I see different colors. I see the yellow, I see a little cloudy, brown, dark, well, opaque. One is red, you know, all kind of caramel character, caramel color, and yeah, it's beautiful.
All right, let's have a sample of this. I'm gonna try it first, because we're limiting ourselves, and we're going to probably have a couple of beers afterwards, I know that, so we want to be careful. This one is a nice, slightly cloudy straw color, slightly dark straw color, I would guess, right? I'm not very up on wheat beers. How did you come about going with a wheat beer?
Well, we had a lot of customers asking for one. We wanted to do a little bit more aggressive on the hops, but then we also had a lot of feedback from our customers that say they don't like hoppy beers or hoppy wheat beers. So we wanted, once again, to have an easy drinking, summer refreshing, crisp beer that would basically satisfy our customers' palates.
It's got a very slightly citrusy background to it,
yeah,
right?
It's very light. It's very clean. I already tasted it.
Oh, you tasted it? So I can have this one, Mark.
Yeah, you can have that all by yourself. Yeah, yeah. I tasted it, and it is absolutely good example of the style. See, if we go, I'm a little one of the stylistic guys, you know. So.
Yeah.
But anyways, it is really good example of the style, and it has all kinds of different flavors. It's not one thing. It's a fruitiness, citrusy. Then you taste the wheat also, and some of the hop bite is there. So it's very. I was saying earlier that you have competition if you go to St. Louis, you know, because H. Lafley makes one of these. You know, it's very close to that, and I like it very much. So it is really high quality.
So while we're supping that, then tell us a little bit about how long you've been open.
All right, so we opened our doors to the public December 19th of just last year. So we've been open about 3.5 months now to the public. We've been in the space for about a year and a half, though. It was a really grueling planning process, but once the planning was over, we were able to have our build-out done in about 120 days.
Wow. So, and you're in what I would term as an office strip, but when you actually walk into the place, it's a lot bigger on the inside than it is. It's kind of like the TARDIS. Doctor Who's TARDIS.
Sure.
Have you got two or three units here joined together, or is this just one unit?
We have a total of 5 units, actually.
Oh, wow.
What you can see here is 4 units. Each unit's 1,650 square feet. This industrial park is zoned light industrial, so technically we weren't even able to open up shop here. We had to go in front of the village. We had to create a new license, liquor classification license, to be able to serve alcohol to the public here. The village was relatively open. They've heard about what other breweries have been doing to other municipalities. Our neighbors in Naperville, Salamoth, Urban Legend, Miskatonic, you know, we can buckle down. You can go on and on about breweries opening in different suburbs. And basically it's educating, you know, the staff, the government, of what we're right. trying to do. We're not trying to open up another bar. We're not going to have a college frat party in here. We're going to be responsible owners, trying to introduce people to craft beer. Use our tasting room as a launching pad for our production.
And you've got quite a large barrelage, because I look to the back and I see quite a few. How many have you got there? What are the fermenters? Or?
Right now,
I always get confused with fermenters and bright tanks. Are they the same, Mark?
No, they're different. Okay. He might explain. You know.
Well, we ferment, you know, ferment our beer in the fermenter, and when we're ready to condition and carbonate, we send it over to the bright tank. Okay. Bright meaning is the yeast has already been dumped. We send it over there for the final conditioning for carbonation, and then we package off our bright tank.
Yeah, and somebody calls it a tax tank, right?
Tax tank?
Yeah, you pay taxes based on what goes through that, right?
Oh, really?
Tax determination tanks, yeah. That's a little bit complicated subject. But
well, we don't want to talk about taxes. We're coming up to the April.
Thank you.
So you said you had talked to the village about it. Do you have any restrictions like some of the places where you can only serve three beers or you know, so many ounces, I guess it is?
We do, and that's the reason they were, you know, so willing to work with us is that, okay, if you're not a bar and you're a tasting room, how do you, you know, kind of separate those two entities? And basically what we do is we are allowed 48 ounces by the village, which is fine. You have 48 ounces of our beer, you're probably had enough.
Exactly. That's a lot.
And we want to be responsible owners here. Yeah. We don't want anyone to drive out of here and get in any kind of danger, be in any danger. So 48 ounces is enough. You feel free to fill growlers, take beer to go with you, take your party back home with you.
There you go.
Encourage that very much. we want our patrons to have fun and be safe at the same time.
Yeah. All right. Let's look at beer number two, which is staring at me from a very raspberry-looking sample glass.
Yeah, it has multiple eyes because it's staring at me, too, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So, Mark, go ahead and you can go first this time.
Oh,
tell us a little
bit
about this one.
KB stands for King Ballantine. Ballantine is a type of cherry that's grown in northern Michigan. And it's grown by our supplier called King Orchard.
Okay.
So it's the King Ballantine. It's a semi-tart cherry, which we add to our first beer, the Way Station, in the secondary fermenter.
Okay.
It's about equivalent to 90 pounds of cherries to juice,
okay,
which is added to each barrel. So 90 times 20 is about 1,800 pounds of cherry juice goes into our 20-barrel batch.
Now, is that a lot compared to other cherry-flavored beers?
Yes. Yeah. Considering it's 100% natural cherry juice, yes.
Yeah.
It's very expensive to make, but we feel real strong in it. We really like it. And then we age some of it in Cabernet wine barrels.
Ooh, now you're talking. That's in my area. Mark, you've had a chance to sample it. First impressions?
First impressions, that always is always that I, something that I always like, and is that it is not very sweet. And if beer is too sweet, it is not very drinkable. You don't really like to eat, I mean, drink lots of it. But this one is not sweet at all. It has a cherry flavor, pretty deep cherry flavor, but it's not sweet. And it's like it leaves a dry your mouth pretty dry at the end, which means you need some more liquid put in there, you know.
Yeah, right.
And it keeps on going, you know.
I always remember that way back I didn't like to have fruit in my beer, and cherry is never one of my favorites, because somewhere along the line cherry pie filling is that really sweet type of thing, right? It's just got that cherry that I don't like. Now I've had a chance to taste this. You're absolutely right, very very dry at the end. Very, very fizzy. Carbonation is very, very fine bubbles on this one. But the tartness is just spot on to take away that real sweet. And I don't think it's too too cherry flavored. So I'd say this was quite a nice, this is another summer beer I would have a lot of.
Yeah, well, when you say tartness...
Actually, I don't know if I would. My mouth would dry out.
Yeah, I don't know what Mark has to say, but I feel it's not tartness like we say lactobacillus or brettanomyces or any none of that. It's just like the cherry tartness of the cherry, and I think the high carbonation brings that out pretty strong, but it's not tart or sour, we would say. It doesn't have that so that we don't mislead our listeners, you know.
Mark?
You're exactly right in your assessment there. It's not a sour beer. It's not inoculated with any kind of wild bacterias, but it is brewed similar to a Berliner Weiss. So you're going to have a little bit more. I think what you're picking up is a little of the acidic character of that beer combined with the tartness of the cherries, combined with the very light hopping and the wheat base of that beer. It's very dry, very crisp, slightly acidic, and slightly tart.
Where does tart become sour? Is that with the introduction of some type of bacteria? What is it?
Yeah, but you can use bacteria or yeast that produces the real sourness, so we understand
Brett.
It. But
that was the word I was looking
Brettanomyces
for.
Yeah. Or lactobacillus or pediococcus, and there's a lot of them. But anyways, this one is not in that league at all. This is clean tartness of the cherry and nothing to do with the bacteria.
So that's where it turns into being a sour ale.
When you introduce those bacteria.
Okay. So back to your brewery. So you've opened up, and you've got quite an impressive array of equipment over there. What was the first beer that you said you were going to brew? Because obviously something led you to do this. Because you said you gave up your other career. So where did you go from there?
Well, you know, it's a passion gone crazy, right?
Always away.
Done with the corporate world. Couldn't go back to that. I've been brewing since 92 at home, and it just kind of snowballed from there. Yeah, so first brewery made was a, I think it would be classified as a Belgo style. So what we did was we basically made a Belgian style golden ale, and we hopped it up with American hops. And we really liked that flavor profile, mixing the Belgian yeast strains, getting some of those estuary characters, some of that spicy phenolics, and mixing it with some of the cool boutique, what I call it, American hops that are out there, which lends to me very complex, light, fruity, citrusy, clean, crisp beer that you just want to keep drinking more and more of.
Exactly. The fact you said there about you would just want to keep drinking it, I know when I tried... Ulterior Motive, is it?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I smelt that and I said, boy, this is smells like a beer I really want to start drinking, and I wasn't disappointed. Is that the next one we're on here or not?
This is a Mandarin.
Mandarina.
It's
okay, so this is one that also has lots of very flavorsome hops in it, right? Mandarina hops?
It's a newer hop variety called Mandarina Bavaria, which gives off that mandarin orange character. It's not as potent, as strong as some of those other hops that we use in Ulterior Motive. But we find it, once again, it's a nice, easy drinking pale ale. It finishes dry, crisp, and you want more. Sorry, we're out of Ulterior Motive right now.
Oh, damn! Oh, it's all right. I had it last time.
Okay.
Time to try something else.
It's in our bright tank right now.
Oh, all right. There you go. You do have a number of beers that are Belgian inspired. I mean, Belgian Gold Ale. You've got a Belgian style IPA, right?
Belgian style IPA, yeah. And then we have a double right now.
And a double. So is that kind of where you like to go? If you started there, you've got a number of them, or are you just kind of going everywhere?
hate to say this to you, but we like to alter things up here.
Hey, there we go. Boom, boom. Thank you.
So, yeah, I would say about two-thirds to three-quarters of our beer are American-inspired, American craft beer-inspired. But we also like to go back to those experimentals, the more complex beers, and do the Belgian beers. So our first group of beers that we brewed were Belgian-inspired. Mm-hmm. We took a break from there, and we went with the American craft beers theme. And now we're, the next three batches coming out are going to be Belgian-inspired again. We're going to go back to that first batch that we made that went over so well, the Belgian-inspired pale ale IPA. We're going to be a little bit more aggressive on the hops with the dry hopping on this one. Followed up by we're going to do a Saison.
Ooh.
With rye and chamomile flowers, something different, and we're going to use some honey malt. Those three together on our pilot system was really complex and nice. It was balanced really nice. And then we're going to follow that with a huge beer. We're going to make a Belgian quad, using some nice Belgian candy sugars and some other secrets I can't tell you.
You said you had a pilot system there. Was that something you built in from the beginning with the intention of test batching stuff?
Yeah, we like to experiment a lot. We can go crazy on a 10, 20-gallon batch and not lose a lot of money if we end up having to dump it because we got a little too out of hand crazy with ideas. But we're always trying to push the borders, try new things, try new different flavor combinations. And then if we like it, we'll scale it up to a big 20-barrel batch.
Well, we've had a chance, or at least Mark's had a chance, to sample the, it's called Mandarina, right? Mm-hmm. And Mark, opinions? Allow me to get in there, let the dog get in there.
Well, opinions. I ran into this hop first time a couple of years ago in Bavaria, where they were scrambling to find a replacement for Hallertau hops because they were disease prone and they couldn't get enough harvest, and so they took this hop and actually that was a hop they tried to educate Bavarians to drink pale ale or porter or something like that, you know, and they use this hop as a base, and it is very mandarin. It does have that fruit character. It's also it doesn't have too much carbonation, and it is, like, to me, it's very, very smooth American pale ale with the mandarin background. It's very clean, even though it's not filtered or anything else, but it's very clean flavor.
You got a very nice lingering flavor in my mouth. Mm-hmm. And
yes.
I notice, even though these were, of course, in your sample glasses, there's a nice lacing around this one. So, you know, that's always kind of attractive to me, that when I'm drinking my glass, it goes down well. So what was the style again on this one?
It's American Pale Ale.
American Pale Ale. Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. So the malts that you use primarily, any specific ones you really like, or do you alter that up as well?
Well, you know, we use a base malt out of Wisconsin. We use Breeze, just because it's a more local company. We love the results, which is the number one thing.
We like
quality's first, right? So quality, and we found it with Breeze base malt. We do use other base malts on occasion, depending on what style of beer we're brewing.
Mm-hmm.
German lager, we're going to probably bring in some Fireman malt from Germany. We use some English malts in some of our more English-inspired IPAs and things like that, or Scottish ale, or stouts. But yeah, there's so many great maltsters out right now that they're really making it easy for the brewer to get great results, because the maltsters are really doing a great job.
Yeah, there's more competition in the malt market. It was a much narrower market, like, say, 20 years ago. You only had a few to pick out of, and that was it. But that now there are, and it's good for the brewer, because the financially speaking, it's a good for the brewer too.
Well, it's great for the brewer financially, but great for the brewer because of the quality is going way up.
Because
competition breeds, right? Greatness.
Oh, absolutely. And I see most in the malts, I see that competition.
Mm-hmm.
Really, that's more than anywhere else, I think.
And our efficiencies keep going up, and the quality of the malt keeps just going up. So it's great to be able to brew.
Yeah, you mentioned about the malt. So many malts. Malsters, are they called? Or Maltesers? That's one for the English guys. What the whole craft beer boom has done, and this is a great example of it, is provided work for so many people. I mean, you have a lot of bar staff and managers and so on, and this can only be good for the economy.
You know, the list is endless. It really is. The amount of vendors that just came in here just in our build out, and then you're looking at, it's not just about the malt, barley, hops, yeast, and water. It's about labels and packaging.
Yeah.
And okay, who's designing those labels? You're employing artists. You're employing paper companies.
Yep.
You're employing salesmen for all these companies. Glue, caps.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, think about draft equipment,
hey,
CO2.
Caps. You're not going to do any wax caps, are you?
Why is that?
No, light wax caps. They stop me getting it at the beer quick.
Yeah, they, right. Well,
why do they do wax caps?
A little fancy, you know, bling to the bottle.
It doesn't add. It doesn't add anything to
no,
it.
No.
Well,
it just looks.
I believe it is helps with the oxidation.
Maybe. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, it helps keep the environment outside. You know, oxidizing beer inside.
So. And I must admit, you said it's a bling. Well, if people who don't know the brews, don't know the brewers, don't know the breweries, they come along to, let's say, a Binnie's, and they see something on the shelf that's got like a little bit of wax on the top, they think, wow, that must be a really top-notch beer, you know, we'll give that a go.
You know, once again, it is a little bling, but I think the real, reason for that is to help with the oxidation. It keeps the environment, it keeps air out of that bottle. Even though it's capped, there is some, egress.
Yeah, there's something to it. Sure. Yeah, otherwise, somebody wouldn't. I mean, it wasn't exactly the latest generation of brewers who found that out. I'm sure that's been going on for quite a while, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You've come to beer number 4, I know, because you've picked it up and you're sniffing it. This one has the name G7 on here on the sample list. And this is actually what Mark is drinking, a beer, an after work beer for you, I guess. Because I know you started early this morning. We exchanged a little bit of conversation across the internet, and it was like 7 o'clock. I was in my car, and Mark obviously was here brewing. So long days for you, right?
Long days, but you know, the time flies,
when you're having fun. All right, G7. Now, it's not a collection of countries organizing the world, I'm sure. It is.
It's our red ale, and it's called G7 on the board just because the name of the beer is actually called Galaxy in the Seven Seas. Galaxy being one of the major hops that we use in this. And then the Seven Seas are the other half of the hops that we use in here, which is a mix of all 7 sea hops.
Wow.
So you have Columbus, Citra, Chinook, Crystal, Cascade, Centennial, and there's 1-1, Citra.
All right, so, there you go. Ding, ding, 10 points. So you got all 7. Points. Well done.
So we use all those hops in this beer, even though it's not a huge hoppy beer.
Right.
It's a red ale, so you want to have that malt forward. But we do use all those hops in this beer because us as Americans love hops.
You love your hops. Yeah, that's right.
Well, yeah, I would say the hop aroma is very subtle but complex. It every time you take a sniff of it, something different comes out. Yeah, but I think the main character is kind of earthy to me. The citrus doesn't come through so much in this one. It's earthy in the aroma, and also there's like caramel fruity kind of blend in the aroma. Also, both of those. I used to say a long time ago when people made extract beers, when they had so that certain kind of sugar in it, it gave that. But this one has same kind of aroma, but it's not. It's very pleasant because it mixes with that fruity character, you know. I don't know. That must be the yeast that you use on this one.
I think it's a combination of all of those.
Right. Okay.
I really like the malty character of this beer. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Some toasted bread.
Yes.
Slight toffee, slight caramel.
Yeah.
There's really no caramel malts in this, though.
Well, not necessarily, but you can still get that character. I don't know. I'm not saying it does. It's just the kind of perception has. And when it's warm, it has warmed up. Now when you say bready and all that start coming out, okay? It takes several sips to get into this beer. It's that complex.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first time I've sipped this, I'm getting... I got a nice kind of a hoppy aroma, citrusy kind of thing coming in. I don't know why that would be. I don't get any malts, but then again, my nose has never been any good. And now with the first... Huh?
No, it's big, but it's not good. Right?
Well, yeah, thank you very much. I knew you were going to...
Yeah,
right. Oh, dear. Where was I? Oh, yes, and the first sip I get... I don't get the maltiness, you're right. I haven't got to that bit yet. I'm getting through some of this hoppy flavors. And
yeah, it's very nice when you have to really dig it out of the beer. It keeps it interesting.
Yep, there it comes.
You don't get it right away.
Right,
you have to have several sips and it builds on you. I like those kind of beers, and this one is definitely one of those.
Now, what's the ABV on this one?
ABV is about 6.8%.
Okay, so
crazy.
I'm glad to say you can't really put it into that session beer, but I could certainly have a couple of pints of this. I think it's very refreshing, very nice.
It's my new favorite.
There you go. What was your old favorite?
Same as yours, the Ulterior Motive.
Okay.
Can't wait for that to
Can't
come
wait
back.
For that to come back. Yeah, you definitely got a winner there, folks, even though we don't have a sample of it. So, now, as you move through your journey here, 3.5 months into being open, and everything seems to be going quite well for you. I was in here on a Friday night, and it was busier than I could have tell. What's going to be your approach to marketing yourself as a brewery? Because obviously you've got to start coming to some of these festivals, for which there's at least two or three every week coming into the season now.
Yeah, well... We definitely get hit up for festivals all the time. We sit down and we meet. We talk about which ones we think is going to, you know, basically be best for us and most bang for our buck, right? So we pick and choose a few that we really feel are going to be advantageous to our brewery, which is like, I don't know, 12 for the rest of the year.
Yeah, right.
So about, you know, one or two a month we're doing just to get our name out there. We're hitting social media. We're doing it all in-house. We're spreading the word. And what's been great for us, we haven't really done much marketing. We haven't done much advertising other than we feel that treating our customer and coming with good product, our customers have been our best advertising advocates, so to speak. So we show a customer a good time. They tell their friends about it. They come in. So word of mouth has been our best way of advertising right now.
That's good. Mark is on to beer number 5. Now, you have about 12 or so on rotating taps?
We have 12 faucets right there. One is nitro pour.
Which one's that?
We have some... Well, it's coming soon.
Oh, it's coming soon.
Right
okay.
now, we have a homemade ginger soda in there.
Oh,
right
really?
Now.
Oh, I like ginger sodas. I got to try
it's
that.
It's delicious.
Ooh, lovely. Is it kind of a Jamaican ginger soda?
No, it's shredded ginger with sugar, water, and a little bit of lemon juice added, and that's it.
This is kind of a nice thing for somebody who doesn't drink, who's the DD maybe even.
Absolutely.
You know, to have on. So that's a great thing. Mark, you have the next beer, which is the CM on here, which stands for?
It's a derivative Ulterior Motive called Citra Motive. So we loved our Ulterior Motive, and once again, we like to alter things, right?
Yep.
So we're always changing and tweaking and experimenting. So we basically took Ulterior Motive, and we went from a base malt of what's called Brewer's Malt, to a slightly darker base malt called Pale Ale Malt. And all we did was, that was the change, and we also changed it by adding just a little bit more Citra hops during our dry hopping.
Okay. What are the stats on this one?
The stats on that one, called that one about 7% alcohol.
Wow.
We're about 70 IBUs on that. And it's about a pound and a half per barrel of dry hopping.
Okay.
Yeah, I never tasted a beer like this exactly.
Oh, really?
It's like this citrus motive all over the place. There's citrus everywhere, and somewhere there in the middle you find the beer. It is wonderful. It has the depth in the aroma, depth of all kinds of citrus, but it's not too strong or too overwhelming or anything. And then when you put it in your mouth, that same impression continues in the flavor. So it goes directly from aroma to flavor, and it is so pleasant and smooth and soft. And my goodness, I never had like that so overwhelming and citrusy, and then beer.
What were the hops in the Ulterior Motive? What the difference?
Same exact hops.
But less.
All we did was add. The Ulterior Motive is dry hopped with about half a pound a barrel of Citra, mm-hmm. and half a pound a barrel of Simcoe hops.
Mm.
With the Citra Motive, once again, all we did was we changed the base malt slightly, but then we added extra dry hopping. So we did a pound a barrel of Citra and a half a pound of Simcoe. That's the difference between Ulterior Motive.
And so, what as far as stylistic, what style you think is like IPA or something, or West, do you really East? Care?
Yeah, I mean, that's, really don't. I mean,
yeah,
good.
You know,
excellent.
I mean, you know, we're brewing the beers that we like to drink. You know,
yep.
I know Founders has a little bit of a tagline that's similar to that, but we find that. You know, once again, we do a lot of experimentation. So we find a flavor profile that we like, and we run with it.
Right.
You know, we like it. Hopefully everybody else will like it. If they don't, we won't make it again.
Yeah.
If our customers
exactly, because it's not necessarily that you like drinking it. It's that you're selling it now.
Right.
You got some skin in the game here now.
Well, yeah, and hopefully... you know, we're finding out, though, what we like, a lot of our customers like, too. So it's... It's been a lot of fun.
There is no other day. Let's try it another way. You'll lose your mind and play. Three games for play. See Emily play.
Going back to IPAs, I look at, you know, IPAs from Firestone Walker. I look at IPAs from some of these great breweries out here.
Yeah.
They're super hoppy, but they're not bitter. And that's what we like. We like balanced beers. And if it's an IPA, it's still going to be balanced. Hit me with all the hops. If it's a stout, it's going to be balanced. Hit me with that roastiness and that chocolate, that, you know, that malty side of it. Same with the red ale. Okay, red ale is still going to be balanced, but you're going to hit more of the malt side of it. So it's all about balance. It's all about bringing that flavor characteristic that we want to bring out into those balanced beers.
Right. What you mentioned a while back that you were going to put some of the beer into. I can't remember which one it was now. I've had quite a few. After the fifth one, you get confused. You were going to put one into a Cabernet wine barrel. Barrel aging obviously is a hot spot as breweries start to get in and get their feet under the table, you know, get their clientele. People want to have some barrel aged beers. Tell us about your program, because obviously you've got one.
yeah, of course. You know, once again, we love beer here. We love great beer. We love complexity in the beers. So we're going to take our base beers and we're going to add complexity to them, alter them, so to speak, by aging them and getting that same beer turning into completely something different.
Right.
It's nothing new. Your brewers have been doing this for a while. But we love barrel-aged beers here, and we want to add that to our program. We have some barley wine aged in some Elijah Craig barrels right now. We've got some of our Imperial Stout.
In some what barrels?
Elijah Craig.
Elijah Craig?
Craig.
Oh, Craig. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was listening with an accent. I beg your pardon.
That's good.
I thought, whoa, holy cow, wait a minute. Is that a whiskey or a bourbon?
It's
I've never heard of it.
I'm not a bourbon expert, but
yeah.
I tell you what, the barrels smell incredible.
Oh.
So
nice.
Very, very much vanilla, yeah. Things like that. And then we have some of our Imperial Stout aging in some bourbon barrels. Old Forester, I believe. And then we took our King Ballantyne Cherry Wheat Beer. And we took about 600 gallons. And we're aging it in some Cabernet barrels.
Okay.
Add some more complexity. Whoa. Get some vanilla, some oak, some wine character to the beer.
Lovely.
And we tasted the other day, and it's coming along just fine.
How soon before you're going to release the first one of any of these?
Well, it goes through a panel. We're tasting some of these barrels about every 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay.
We don't want to rush them. We want to give them the time that they need in the barrel. So I think our first release should be end of summer, and then a lot of these other beers are going to be released when the weather turns cold,
right.
Which is perfect timing, right, yeah. For a good barrel aged beer.
But you know what? As I always say, I don't mind sitting down on an 80-degree day and drinking a super beer if it's a heavy stout made in bourbon barrels. I'll drink it anytime. Mark, you're on to the next selection that you have. This one is notated as JR, so I'm going to assume that's your junior.
That is junior, and it's a barley wine, American-style barley wine, that we call junior because we made it a little bit smaller than the BJCP guidelines of a barley wine, or what Americans do now in barley wines are making them, you know, ginormous, 20% barley wines, things like that. We're going to put out something like that, but we wanted something that somebody can drink now. And, you know, once again, being only open a short time, we didn't want to overwhelm people with this huge, massive barley wine. We wanted more drinkable barley wine. It still weighs in at a good 8.5% ABV. I believe it still has some characters of an American barley wine. Once again, we have some of that aging in our barrels and some of it available in our tap room.
Well, when I first took a sniff of it, it has the sweetness or the maltiness is the prominent aroma coming out of it. Not much hops coming out of it. Then once it warmed up a little bit, I swirl around a little bit, then you get a little hint of hops. And I would say it's very straightforward beer when you taste it. It doesn't go all over the place, but it has still that nice barley wine character in it. There's enough complex dimensions. Boy, I figured that just
what,
out.
What was that word again?
Complex dimensions.
Wow,
you know.
Complex dimensions.
It's going all
that's
over the place.
That's a good beer name right there.
Complex dimensions.
Right,
hey,
okay.
You can have it.
You can have it. No charge.
Just credit Britton Yankee at the bottom.
No charge. Yeah. give me a taster when
yeah,
you make it.
We're done.
but it is not very sweet. There's a lot of barley wines that have very sweet character in
right.
it. This one doesn't. And when you say drinkable, and I think when you keep them dry enough, they are drinkable, and that's what I like. Pretty much the whole line that's in here, for that matter.
I noticed that I did get you know, what I would expect the aroma to be from a barley wine, but dummied down, is that the right, you know, in the nicest way. And then I got some sort of a little vanilla-y thing right up front as I inhaled the first quaff here. And then it just kind of went out, and I thought, oh yeah, this is kind of nice. I wouldn't have known it was a barley wine style unless you'd have told me. I'd have thought it was something like a Imperial IPA or a double IPA, but the aroma gives it away, I think.
Yeah, and then I'm just saying it doesn't have that hop character over IPA type of beer. Okay, it is on the other side, rather. I'd say the hop will give it away if it would be double IPAs. They go overboard for me, you know, and this one doesn't.
And all the way through these tastings, we're sharing our samples here because we've got so many, and we went through a tasting one time where we had 8 different beers, and we went through the whole 8 beers. By the end of the show, we were like, "Hello, what's the next one?" This is a lot better. So, it's always the way that after the second or third sip, you've really got that beer down that you're either going to like it or you're not going to like it, or it's just okay. And the second sip I had of that was a little bit more of that barley wine kind of style coming through. So I think you describe it as a small barley wine in your website online, and I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, I like that small barley wine. It's the first one I ever tasted. So
I'll come up. Can I have a small barley wine, please? And they'll serve me a big one. Before we go to the last sample that we have, and then we can talk maybe about some of the things that are coming out. By the way, as we record this today, April 7th, it is National Beer Day. Thank you very much to getting rid of prohibition. So I say let's raise our glasses cheers. And say cheers to that.
Cheers.
There we go. Lovely. Even though Mark's is empty now, he's got through the whole one.
Waiter. Yona wants one.
Delivery. And I mean, what are you going to start getting your beers out to the customers in? Because you're just on tap right now.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You're correct. We're all draft accounts only right now.
Okay.
In here. And then we have about 25 accounts that you can, you know, restaurants, different bars that have us on tap already. We're adding 1 to 2 accounts a week on average. We're self-distributing right now.
Okay. Do you see yourself going to a distributor? Self-distributing is it's a hell of a task, isn't it?
It's hard work.
It is, yeah.
It really is. It's a whole nother job.
Yeah.
And between our team here, we kind of divide that role right now. It's manageable. We like that, though, because we're getting to know our customer. We know where our beer is. We've turned down sales a couple times now because the establishment doing things that we don't like with beer. We want our beer to taste just like it tastes here in their place.
So what are they, obviously we're not going to name names, but what are they doing that causes that beer to be different?
Well, cold storage is one.
Okay.
It's
got
to be cold stored. Your draft lines have to be clean. And your glassware has to be clean.
Yeah, that's the basic thing, you know.
Yeah.
Every bar should have that, actually, what I'm thinking, you know.
I agree 100%. Yeah, I do like the... Is there a name for that little squirty thing that they put the glass over before they give it to you?
We call it a glass rinser.
There we go.
That. I mean, we have to get that in our local bar, too.
I think so,
With one of these beers or two.
I agree 100%. We're well associated with John's Tavern in Winfield. If we had the dinger here, we'd give him a ding, but we don't have it, so I'd like... And he does have a great selection of craft beers, and we've been getting on him to get a squirty thing. I think I'm going to stick with squirty thing. I like that. Okay. For a long time. So that could be... Because I can see one of these beers coming on at John's. So it'll go down one or more of these. This would be a great thing.
I mean, based on your qualifications, cold storage and clean lines and all that, they have all that stuff. So so you would be okay over there.
Those are your accounts that we like.
They craft beer. Outlet, they have 24 taps, so, and they rotate pretty nicely too, so there will be room for this. I mean, these are impressive beers. Actually, if I may say right now, is that all of these beers that we've been through, they don't go overboard in any which way, and you didn't try to be too funky or do some extraordinary things that some breweries do try to get to the marketplace. You just make good beer, basic ingredients most of the time, and it comes out good. You know, that's a skill by itself.
The delivery, are you going to do bottles and cans and or cans, I guess?
Yes and yes. We're in the middle of building a 4-head counter pressure bottle filler, basically for a larger format, like either a champagne bottle or a bomber, something special. We might wax dip.
Oh, all right.
We might not. We won't wax dip your...
Oh, thank you.
Your share, but...
Keep one to the side. Phil's bottle, no wax.
Sure.
Oh, wax on, wax off. I like getting that one in. Anyway, carry on.
So we're going to have some specialties. Some of our barrel aged things in bottles, and then take our more popular selling beers, or three or four mainstays that we have, and add a canning line. Unfortunately, it's like a 24 week waiting list to get these things. So we're looking at late summer, early fall, probably.
You're going to get your own and not have a guy in a truck drive up.
Correct. I mean, we've explored that option. We're gonna talk to them a little bit, but we haven't decided. We like doing things ourselves here, so we have more control, knowing exactly what we have here.
Do you prefer cans to bottles, or is that depending on what the beer is that goes into it?
Well, it depends on the beer and what you're doing with it. Cans are our superior packaging product for several reasons. Being number one, shelf life. Okay, you're going to get better shelf life off of using cans, less oxidation in a can. Cans are cheaper. Cans are more green friendly, right? And guess what? You're decanting that, right? You're drinking a craft beer. You should be decanting into a glass anyway.
Oh, absolutely. I could bring a can to a picnic.
Well, or to the
decanting,
beach.
Mark, I always thought it was pouring it into a bloody glass.
Well, that's a wine term I've heard
Well,
before.
You know, some of these beers could be considered wines, right?
Sorry, Mark.
Oh, that's okay. That was well-deserved.
The one thing that I know about cans, as you say, they tend to store easier in most people's fridges, because you've always got one of those little things where you put the cans on top of one another, you can pull them out, you know, ching, 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 all the way down. Now, bottles, if you've got the big bombers, you've got to have a slightly higher shelf, and, you know, it's easily packable.
Exactly.
Easily packable. Mark,
yes, sir.
You have come to the last beer in our samples of Alta Brewings. It's the only one that appears to be slightly dark in any way.
Well, it's opaque, I think. You can't really see
opaque,
through
it. Opaque, yeah, right.
It has ST, so I'm guessing it's some kind of stout.
What do we got here, Mark?
It's a stout, but that ST stands for Smash Tongue.
Is that single malt, single hop?
No.
Damn. Okay.
About seven different malts in there. Two different hops. Smash ton. The name came from basically we had our mash tun, and we had literally over a ton of malt in our tun for a 20 barrel batch. And as we were raking it out with our plow arm actually cracked. We could have called it cracked ton, but
yeah, no.
Really?
Would have been
that's
good.
That would have been bold.
Maybe we got more attention that way. But
almost as bad as Elijah crack. Well, you could do plumber's crack.
Plumber's crack.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, that kind of reminds me of something nasty.
We won't go there.
No, we have fun.
So back to the beer.
Statistics
on this.
So it's 10.25% imperial stout.
Well disguised.
It doesn't drink that way. It's a lot of roastiness, some dark chocolate notes in there. A little, you know, espresso. A little bit of earthiness from the English hops that we use in there. And then once again, we wanted I don't want to call it a generic imperial stout, but I want to talk quality, well balanced stout that we can do different things with, one of which we are aging in bourbon barrels. We believe that that's going to be a great base beer for our bourbon barrels. And the other thing is that we were able to infuse that beer with some other things. We have some aging in with some tart cherries.
Oh.
And then we have another one that we infused with toasted coconut.
Yeah.
And we called it Coco Ton. And I know I don't like coconut either.
Come October, you can put pumpkin in it, and then you'll hit the double whammy.
I don't think we're doing pumpkin beer. But
all right, good man. Can I have you say that louder?
I will not do a coconut beer.
Okay. No. So actually, I should have a comment on that, though. I don't like coconut, but I know that when people put it into beer, it tends to come out a lot different to if you were having coconut on a candy bar or in a cake or chomping down a piece of coconut. It's a lot different.
Yeah. Well, I shouldn't say I didn't do a coconut beer. I'm not going to do a pumpkin beer.
Okay.
The coconut beer was basically infused, toasted in raw coconut through what some people call a Randall. We have a rocket.
Oh, okay.
So we ran it through the rocket.
What's the difference between a Randall and a rocket?
The Randall's you can see through. It's plastic. Looks like a pool filter, the one that I've seen. I could be totally wrong on that.
No, it's like...
Our rocket is basically a hot rocket made by Blinkman. It's stainless steel. It's easier to clean. It's not as visually pleasing. It's in the back. We run that style right through there.
So it's also a good name for a beer, Hot Rocket.
Yeah, agreed. First time
you can have that one
that.
As well.
So we, oh, hello, it went over really well in our tap room, and people keep asking for it. So we're going to do some limited release stuff with that, working with infusing our beers with cocoa nibs, vanilla, you know, tart cherries.
Mark, give us your thoughts on this one, because I've tasted it and I've formed an opinion.
Yeah, well, okay, you hear mine first. And I can taste the alcohol a little bit, which is, but it adds something to the sweetness of the beer, so it's not a bad thing at all. Sometimes alcohols, especially have fusels out there, something like that. Some of these do have, you know, that's unpleasant. This is just clean, and it's also now. Again, we threw 7 beers here. They all smooth, soft, easy drinking. This is not as robust as I would have expected for an imperial stout. It is so smooth, and it's almost disguising itself, you know, being an imperial stout. That's how I looked at it.
Yeah, my taste buds wanted to say this should be a lot more chewy. Based on the stats you gave, and when I first tasted it, I thought it was quite light. I mean, easy drinking. It's and I don't know about you, but 10%, I'm not getting that 10% at all. You got to be careful with this
Phil, you have to remember that the alcohol doesn't add really to the chewiness, you know, and all that
stuff.
No,
that's true.
It's lighter than water, you know, so...
Yeah, what, alcohol?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it is, isn't
So
it's
not
if I drink a lot of
way.
Alcohol, then I'll float.
Yes, right, absolutely.
Good.
You look like the guys in Dead Sea.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dear, I don't know what to say about that. Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure. I have a couple of last questions to ask you. What's your favorite movie?
Ooh. Comedy, drama, what?
Up to you.
Oh, boy.
If you had a movie that you really wanted to watch over and over again, let's say at the end of a hard brewing day, somebody said, hey, I set up a TV. Let's sit down and have a few beers and watch a movie.
Can we come back to that question?
Okay.
Give me a second.
Okay. Who's your favorite band?
My favorite band? Can I give you like top five maybe? Or
yeah, sure.
Like I'm a classic rock guy. So,
there you go.
You know, I like Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd. Let's go Black Sabbath. I'm a big Stevie Ray Vaughan fan.
Oh, yeah.
And when I'm feeling kind of funky, I'll go either Pink Floyd or, Grateful Dead.
There you go. Oh, Grateful Dead. Oh, yeah. And then what do you do for fun? Because, okay, brewing is a lot of fun, right? But now you're doing it professionally, so you got to have some release outside of that.
I'm still, like, having fun doing this.
Oh,
right?
there you go.
I used to brew beer for fun. Now I brew beer for fun.
And that's how you started, right? You were doing home brewing.
Yeah, but I guess if I had to say what I like to do on my day off, I'd like to. I'm a family guy, so if I could take my family fishing.
Nice. You used to do a lot of fishing?
Not as much as I'd like, but we you know, it's the experience. It's catching fish. I like to. You know, catch what I want to eat, and we have like a little barbecue.
And brew what you want to drink.
Exactly.
Sounds good to me.
Perfect combination,
indeed,
I would say.
Indeed, Mark, and you're the big fisherman in here, right? You're heading up to Alaska again this year, so hopefully you'll bring some stuff back with you.
I will, I guarantee.
Good man. Now, this is going to be the question that always gets most brewers, okay? Tell us your stats here, i.e. where can they find Alta Brewing Company, the listeners, and what's the telephone number and the website?
Oh, boy. Good question.
Hey, see, he's looking it up.
Well, I know our address. We're at 2300 Wisconsin Avenue in Downers Grove, 20 miles or so west of the city. You can take the Metro train.
Yes, very close to the Metro, right? A walkable distance from the Metro.
Yeah. We're about 3 blocks south of the Belmont BNSF line. So please come in from the city.
Yeah, the one that goes to Aurora, right?
Exactly.
Right, okay.
Exactly. And then we're in about 25 different bars and restaurants right now, or you come here.
Yeah.
Come see us here, and then look for us in bottles and cans in the fall.
That sounds great. We've had a real good time. Mark, any closing comments?
As I said earlier, I like the smoothness and drinkability of all these beers, and I really want to emphasize the fact that they didn't go too funky, and it's a basic good stuff. Because I'm a firm believer that what you have available in a basic line of beers that, say, BJGP guidelines or whatever say, you can make wonderful beers just taking that. And we have a good example of seven beers of that kind here in front of us tonight.
And more on the menu. We know that. So, yeah. Mark, once again, thank you very much indeed for your time. I know we had a lot of trouble trying to line up our schedules. You're a working man. We're working men. But we did it in the end, and we've enjoyed it a great amount. Thank you very much, and keep brewing the beer.
Well, thanks, guys. Thanks for coming out. We appreciate you having
me. Yep. Our pleasure, indeed, to try these great beers. So come on out, folks. It's good stuff.
Yep, that's absolutely good stuff.
Now,
yes, sir.
That was a marathon interview.
It was? I could never do 26 miles, you know.
No, I tell you, should we go and have another beer?
I think we should, because my mouth is dry after this marathon.
I know, it's good stuff, man. Mandarina?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
For instance.
Britain Yankee!
Britain Yankee!
I'll have a pint, Yankee. Go, give us a pint. You got any tetanus?
A pint, please, Barbara. Give me another pint, please, Barbara.